The reading is from Luke chapter 10, verse 38 to 42, at the house of Martha and Mary. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her."
Thanks, Alex. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Isn't it amazing to have our youth band leading us in worship? So beautiful, really amazing. Now, I wonder, have you ever done one of those personality tests or kind of team-building character tests like Myers-Briggs or Belbin or Enneagram or DISC, one of those kind of things? Some people absolutely hate them with a passion. I'm one of the people who quite enjoys them. About 15 years ago, I did a Myers-Briggs. And if you haven't done Myers-Briggs, what you do is you fill in this massive questionnaire, and then it comes out with four letters which purportedly kind of sum up your character. And I think it does a pretty good job. So the letters that I came out with were ENTJ, which, if I remember correctly, I think means extrovert, no surprise there, intuitive, maybe more of a surprise there, thinking and judging. Anyway, it was a good day, and at the end of the day, they said to us, for a bit of fun, when you get home, you can look up this particular website, and you can look up people from history who might have shared your personality traits. Obviously, it's completely made up, because so far as I'm aware, Julius Caesar didn't take Myers-Briggs. But they reckon there was some science to how they worked this all out. Anyway, so very excitedly, I got home, got on the website, typed in ENTJ, and was really keen to see who are the characters from history who I'm similar to. I was thinking maybe Abraham Lincoln, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa. Turns out the first two names on my list, Hitler and Napoleon. Not enormously encouraging. It is easy to read this passage about Martha and Mary as a sort of a judgment about personality types. Extrovert versus introvert, doer versus thinker, active versus chillaxed. But actually, that isn't the right way to read it at all. In fact, this is a passage about discipleship versus distraction. And in particular, distraction caused by hurry. Let's get into the passage. So Jesus and his disciples turn up at the house of Mary and Martha. Martha is the older of the two sisters, we think the head of the household. And immediately that Jesus and his disciples turn up, Martha clicks into hostess with the mostess gear. And she begins panicking. Oh, crumbs, Jesus is here. Jesus and all his disciples are here. What am I going to do? I haven't hoovered since last Thursday. This is awful. And I haven't got any food. What am I going to do about food? The Ocado delivery doesn't even come until tomorrow. Oh, crumbs. So she legs it off down to the local co-op, picks up everything she can off the shelf. She steals a trolley and takes it all the way up, ditching it in the ditch near the house on the way. She gets back and realizes, oh, crumbs, I haven't got the milk. She'd run all the way back and get the milk again. She sprints back to the house. And all the time, Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus. So Martha is in the kitchen and she's legging it from place to place. She's got all three ovens on the Aga going. She's getting the Thermomix out from the bottom drawer. She's getting the whisk out from the top drawer. She has to rush into the utility room to get the step so she can reach the George Foreman lean mean grilling machine from the top of the drawers. She's got this going and that going. She doesn't know what to do. Will Penne Alabiata be all right? I don't know if Jesus likes that or not. And all the time, Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus. And Martha is getting more and more annoyed by this. Why isn't Mary helping? This is ridiculous. She's rushing around. She's sorting out the bedding and the towels and the pillowcases and all this kind of stuff. Eventually, she comes into the living room and she goes across to the side cabinet where the lovely cork table mats are. And she begins to lay the table all the time, giving some ahems, ahems to Mary. But Mary remains sitting at the feet of Jesus. And Martha is really beginning to get cross at this point, so she goes to dress her behind Jesus to get the cutlery, the best cutlery, of course. This is Jesus, after all. And looking over Jesus' shoulder at Mary, she's like, get in the kitchen, get in the kitchen. But Mary just sits at the feet of Jesus. And eventually, Martha loses her shizzle, and she shouts, Jesus! Won't you tell Mary to come and help me? Can't you see I'm doing everything here? And Jesus, very calmly and very gently, says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only a few are needed. In fact, only one. Now, I know for a fact that some of you are sitting there right now thinking, well, that's ridiculous. It's completely understandable what Martha's done. Of course she's trying to sort the house out and get the food ready. And why isn't Mary helping her? What's going on here? And why is Jesus defending that old lazy bones Mary? And I can understand that. In some ways, it's completely reasonable what Martha is doing. And if this was how it always happened in their house, she'd have a point. But actually, we don't know that that's always how it happened in this house. So far as we know, Mary wasn't just a layabout who never did anything. The key factor here is that Jesus is in the house. And Mary has chosen to spend time with him. But Martha is so distracted by all the busyness, by all the rushing around, and by all the stress, anxiety, and upset that that causes, that she's missed out on the most important thing, which is spending time with Jesus. So this isn't about personality type. This is about discipleship versus distraction. And in particular, distraction caused by hurry. Now, quite a lot of what I want to say today comes from the book by Jean-Marc Comer that I plugged a few months ago in a sermon. It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And in that book, Jean-Marc Comer suggests that hurry is the principal cause of distraction in our contemporary society. He describes hurry as being pathological busyness. So it's not a crime or a sin to be busy. Being busy is perfectly okay. As long as what we're doing in our busyness is good, that's fine. Jesus lived a busy life. He only had 2 or 3 years' worth of ministry, and he achieved rather a lot during that time. He spent enormous amounts of time with people, doing things, traveling to and from places, teaching, preaching, performing miracles. He was busy. But he also had balance in his life. He spent a lot of time just hanging out with those closest to him. He spent a lot of time with God in prayer. Jesus lived a balanced life. The problem for many of us, especially in our society today, is that we live a hurried life, rushing around from one thing to the next. The word hurry, in some ways, it sounds quite a nice sort of word, doesn't it? But the way that John Mark Comer and other thinkers refer to it is really quite different. So Carl Jung, who is the great psychologist, said, hurry isn't of the devil, it is the devil. Dallas Willard, the noted theologian, said, hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our age. And W.F. Adams, who was the spiritual director of C.S. Lewis, and therefore I think deserves quite a lot of kudos, said, hurry is the death of prayer. To walk with Jesus is to walk at a slow, unhurried pace. So hurry is pathological busyness. Busyness that causes us to be so stressed, anxious, upset, worried, that we are distracted from the most important things in life. So Jesus says to Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. I wonder whether you relate to that today. Do you feel that your life is so busy that just your head is permanently churning with things to worry about, stress about, be upset about, be concerned about, think about, organize, plan, put into action? I wonder what those things are in your life. But Jesus says, but only few things are needed. I really like the fact that he doesn't just go straight for the one thing here, even though it only takes place within a sentence or two. He takes Martha on a journey here. So you're worried and upset about many things, but only a few things are needed. I wonder, what are the few genuinely, truly important things in your life? The things that really matter. Maybe it's spending time with family or friends. Maybe it's doing something good. Maybe it's helping those who are suffering. It might be different things for each of us, but what are the two or three most important things in your life? We know, don't we, that no one on their deathbed says that they wish they'd worked more. No one says that. But lots of people say they wish they'd spent more time with their family. They wish they'd done those few important things more. It's so easy to get caught up in lots of little things, or indeed lots of big things, but actually the things that in the end are not that important. Maybe they're urgent, but not important. So Jesus says to Martha, only a few things are really important. In fact, really, only one. The most important thing in our lives is our relationship with God. The reason is because that's how we were made. I often quote this, it's one of my favorite things, the Westminster Catechism, that ancient church document, which says, the chief end of humanity is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Our chief end, the most important thing in our lives, whether we know it or not, is our relationship with God, spending time with him. It's because that's how we were made, but also because if we get that right, then the balance of the rest of our life will look right as well. Now, I suspect that some of you are sitting there thinking, well, that is all well and good. That's really noble. I like that idea. I like the idea of being able to slow down, spend more time with my loved ones, spend more time with God in prayer and Bible study and worshipping and so on and so forth. But it's just not feasible. Life is busy. And you're right. And there aren't any easy answers here. We live in a society that is pathologically busy. Maybe you're thinking, it's all well and good saying this, Mr. Vicar, but if I don't work every hour under the sun at my job, I'm going to get the sack, or I'm not going to get that promotion. Maybe you're thinking, it's all well and good, but I have to run around taking my kids to all these different clubs after school, otherwise they won't have the opportunities that I want them to have. Maybe you're thinking, it's all well and good, but if I don't volunteer at church or at the Girl Guides or at my local operatic society, then those things won't happen because there's no one else volunteering to do it. Maybe you're thinking, that's all well and good, but if I don't look after the grandkids 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, my son or my daughter are going to have to quit their job so that they can do it. Maybe there's other things as well. The truth is, it's not easy to live an unhurried life, and especially not in our society, where we are taught that we need to be busy all the time. And in fact, we're so enculturated to this stuff that even when we stop to rest, we're restless. Even when we're doing something which maybe isn't work or all those other things, actually, we're still hurried. What we're doing is just going through hundreds and hundreds of Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter pages or Facebook or whatever it might be. And even those things, actually, they're not true rest. They're not true discipleship. In fact, they're just digital distraction. It's hard to get away from all that stuff. It's hard because society teaches us that we should be busy all the time. And also, if we're really honest, because if we start saying to people that we're not, they might think less of us. If we don't answer by saying, yeah, I'm really busy, then people will think, oh, they must be lazy doing nothing. I think this affects the whole of our society, perhaps especially in the West. But certainly from where we've lived as a family, this was particularly notable in Croydon, where we lived for 6 years before being here. We lived in the South London commuter belt. Lots of people in our parish, in our church, had really high-powered, well-paid, and very busy jobs. And they'd work enormously long hours. And a few years into being there, I realised that I'd fallen into exactly that trap. I was working 75 to 80 hours a week. And when people were asking, I was telling them just how jolly busy I was, because I thought that would impress them. But you know what? I wasn't any more effective working that amount of time. In fact, I think I was less effective, because that pathological busyness, that hurry, was having a detrimental effect on my mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Frankly, probably on my physical health as well. And so I had to decide what I wanted to do. And it was really hard for me to choose to slow down. It was really hard because, and I guess this is the case for lots of people's jobs, but I felt that all the things I was doing were really important, and that if I didn't do them, that would be a disaster. It might mean, for example, not volunteering at a children's group in the knowledge that then they wouldn't have the volunteers to run it. It might mean, for example, not going to see an elderly person, and that might mean I didn't get to see them before they died. It might mean spending less time preparing for a sermon, and therefore people would not be as spiritually nourished as I would hope that they would be. Choosing to slow down meant making hard choices. And if you are pathologically busy, And if you need to slow down, then making those choices will be hard. You might need, for example, to decide to not work 75 hours a week at your job. You might even decide to need to change jobs. You might need to decide not to go for that promotion. You might need to decide that your kids go to one less group per week. And even though that's hard, actually, maybe that's the right thing to do. Because not only what is it doing to your emotional and spiritual health, but what are you teaching them about theirs? It might mean that you need to come to me and say, I need to do less in church. Or you drop something else that you do in your life. All the decisions are really tough. But it might be that that's what God is calling you to do in order that you can live a balanced, healthy, spiritually healthy lifestyle. So the other thing for me was not just the act of slowing down, but then knowing that other people would see that I was living an unhurried life. And even though I was still working hard, I knew that there'd be some people who would think I wasn't working hard enough because that was their culture. And it was really hard to stop saying, yeah, I'm really busy. Oh, it's been a busy week. Oh, it's been a busy month. And I determined that I wouldn't say that, but it was tough because I thought if I don't say that, people will think I'm just dossing around and doing nothing. John Ortberg, the American pastor and theologian, says this. He says, choosing to live an unhurried life in this day is somewhat similar to taking a vow of poverty in centuries past. It's scary. It's an act of faith. But there are deeper riches on the other side. For some here today, this sermon maybe isn't for you. Maybe you've got a great balance in your life, in which case, that's wonderful. But there'll be some of us here today for whom this is knocking at the door of our hearts. And I don't want to pretend there are easy answers, but there are answers. We can choose to move away from hurry. We can choose discipleship over distraction. We can choose to have right at the center of our lives our relationship with God, spending time in prayer, just chatting with him, spending time in Bible study, joining a small group, worshiping here in church, being part of the worshiping community. Because if we get those things right at the center, then I think we'll end up spending more time doing those few important things and less time being stressed, worried, and upset about all the other busyness of life. So, I wonder what God is saying to you about that. As far as personalities are concerned, it is absolutely fine for us to be Marys or Marthas or Hitlers or Napoleon. Well, maybe not the last two. But when it comes to discipleship, let's choose to be Mary. Amen.